welcome to the new season. I don't know what you're complaining about. Okay, we only had four games over the weekend, but we've seen some great goals, a couple of red cards, three penalties. That's more than you get in some leagues over a whole match round. We got 33 minutes of Mariano Diaz, and he was superb. Okay, you'll need 6 months off, but it was nice to see him throw. Barcelona are splashing €75 million on Rodney and on Rodri and bringing him.
Rodney, there's a new one. Leave that. Start again.
Yeah. Yeah, me criticising other people. Anyway, yeah, we'll leave that in. It represents the start of the season. Barcelona splashing €75 million on Rodri and bringing back Cancelo, so we'll have this financial drama of seeing if they can register the players they've actually bought. And all we need next is Jose Mourinho dissing his own team, and it'll feel like we're properly underway. What's that you say? Oh, yes. Why was the ball that hit him in the face? Oh, yeah, we'll take that. Terry Gibson has been in Spain this weekend, but because of a nasty fungal infection, he wasn't able to commentate on Celta Vigo versus Osasuna. Apparently, you need drainage and better aeration, Terry, and then you'll be fine. It was an interesting weekend. Not only, we'll get to the fungal infection, but also, Terry, as well, and you've got to charge the ball up for 5 hours before you're allowed to play football. What is going on?
Well, we're doing something probably no other podcast is doing. We've looked at the in great detail. The reason being, I did the works on the Sevilla versus Rayo game. So we're just getting ready for kickoff. Everyone, the guy on the touchline signals to start that for television purposes, despite it being 3 minutes late as usual. So if people don't realise, there's a floor manager, I guess you'd call him, wouldn't you?
Yep.
That's on the touchline that gives the countdown to the referee. The TV companies around the world are ready to kick off. And that kickoff, mine was 9:30 Spanish time. Well, it was 3 minutes late. and you think, well, there's no point in having this floor manager if you're 3 minutes late. And they are. It is for most games, to be honest. And it drives TV companies mad. They can't believe it. It's meant to be on the and it doesn't. So he gives the signal to start, and then the ref, something happens, and then the referee's like got his hand to his ear, the VAR stuff, and tells the players to stop, don't take the kick off. And then he walks over to the ball, and then he's gesticulating to the players, he's doing the shape of a ball. And I'm thinking, well, what's wrong? It looks like an unexploded ball was on the centre spot. No one would go near it. And then it transpired that there's the chip in the ball, and obviously, the chip wasn't working. I joked and said, someone needs to sort the app out. And it went across to a guy on the touchline with a phone, sorted the app out. So there is an app that they have. And I joked and I said, well, this is ridiculous because there's balls all around the pitch now that are going to be kicked on. And are they all chipped? Well, I did know. It's not something I've looked into in great detail. Neither of us have. No one has. And lo and behold, 7 minutes later, we kick off 7 minutes late. We've been 30 seconds of me saying the ball's going to go out of play and the ball boy's going to throw another ball on. It happened. Another ball was thrown on. But you've done the research, and it's quite an interesting story, actually.
So there are 14 balls on a La Liga match day now. They're ahead of the curve on this one. Not a curve I necessarily wanted them to be ahead of. But so there are 14 balls. They are indeed all chipped. And they need charging up. You have to charge the ball up before you go and play football. Honestly, how are they thinking of these things?
You said it was a 5-hour charge up on each ball.
Yeah, apparently so. So I literally just looked it up on the internet. But yeah. So it's to calibrate with the automated offside, apparently, and gives you the Snicko thing. So we saw that at the World Cup, didn't we, the Snicko?
Yeah.
Where they were saying that the ball hadn't hit the overhead cable, wasn't it, it was an England game, wasn't it?
And, yes.
And everyone else was saying, looked like it hit the overhead cable. Looked like it, did it? But no, apparently
just
not.
Just dropped out of the air, didn't it?
Yeah.
The trajectory went bang, joint straight down.
Yeah. Anyway. So, yeah, honestly, so new ways of delaying the start of this season. if you've missed it all, if you missed the preview, you were due to do Celta Vigo or Osasuna on the Sunday.
Yes.
But the pitch, it's the pitch, everybody, that's got the fungal infection. And so they couldn't play. So, honestly, why? I mean, that is just extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah.
The next round starts. So this round finishes on Wednesday with the Athletic game. Then the next one starts on Thursday. Rayo play again, but they can't play at home because they're banned from their own stadium for health and safety grounds. So it's just an extraordinary
And they're
start to the
playing
season.
in Leganés. And it just seemed it seems weird now in hindsight to have had started this week before any other league. Perhaps that's the attraction that Spain want, La Liga wanted to be the first season to get going. But I think we all respect the fact that La Liga isn't just about Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atletico, but Real Madrid and Barcelona do drive the interest. Just because of the size of the clubs, the players that they signed historically. So it's never going to be a start until they're in it. It just isn't. So to start the season off, the new La Liga campaign with Alaves against Getafe it beggars belief, to be honest. It's with all due respect to Alaves, Getafe, they shouldn't be the curtain, the season opener.
No.
And
I
it
mean,
shouldn't be an.
credit to Getafe. They gave us what you expect of Getafe. First red card of the season, first manager booked,
It's
all of
not a La
that.
Liga campaign, is it, until Real Madrid and Barcelona are playing? And I know we give everyone a fair share on the podcast and we spread it around and we go into detail about other, teams that maybe other people don't often talk about. But people want it. It's not a La Liga round of football unless, and then we're talking to some of the other teams as well. I mean, the Betis Valencia game was cancelled. And the only player I can think of is Lo Celso.
I don't know.
And he didn't play in the final.
But also, they're all playing because Real Madrid and Barcelona played this weekend anyway. So,
With all the players that played in the World Cup at the end.
yeah,
And Mbappe scored at the weekend.
and the Supercoppa was on last like a w Wednesday or something, wasn't it? The European one. And that was with like Dembele and people playing.
PSG lost last night to Lens in the French Super Cup with all their Fabian Ruiz and Dembele and all those guys playing. It's kind of a weird way to start it, just to be just to be the first league that kicks off, but it's not. I mean, it's probably as an interested people, the neutral fan of football. If Real Madrid and Barcelona and Atletico Madrid and Betis and Valencia, if they'd all played this weekend, it might have garnered more attention. But the fact that we're on here today talking about Alaves, Getafe, Sevilla, Rayo, Racing against Villarreal and Espanyol, Levante isn't. Was it worth starting a week early for that round of fixtures? And then, weirdly, no game on Tuesday, but a game on Monday, nothing on Tuesday, and Atleti on Wednesday against Malaga.
And the answer to your question is no, it was not worth starting. But anyway, it's happened. Shall we? We've got some big transfers to do, or Barcelona transfers to do. But can we do the we'll do the games, shall we? We'll
Yes.
stay true to form and talk about Alaves versus Getafe, and Mariano Diaz. He's a player that we've discussed many times over the years on this podcast. The most unfulfilled potential. He's high on the list of unfulfilled potential, isn't he? This fella now well into his 30s, still playing, coming off the bench for Alaves, scored one, made one, was a bit greedy, but then scored a great goal. So you've got to obviously then, he showed the rest of us who was boss. I mean, it doesn't change anything that we've said over the years, but it was good to see him play well, and it was a good win for Alaves.
And our criticism of him has never been about his actual performances. It's been about his reluctance initially, and mostly his reluctance to leave Real Madrid to go and play football. And that was the issue. It was about 3 or 4 years, but it's 4 years since he scored a goal. That was his first goal for 4 years, and he's probably hasn't played a dozen matches in 4 years. And that goes back to the Real Madrid times where they were desperate to move him on. He was on big money, but not massive money. Real Madrid could deal with that. They could suck that up and pay him off to leave. They let him, well, tried to let him go on a free transfer. He wouldn't go. They tried to loan him out. He wouldn't go. And then there's been other routes back in that he's not really taken the opportunity. But we've never really been critical of his actual ability and performances. It's been of his attitude to sit and earn the money, not play football. And then hope that one day he would turn around. Well, it's taken a long, long time So it was not a surprise. And hopefully he gets used more now by Alois. They're a team that do like to play two up front. So the potential is there to play him on a more regular basis. And I can't imagine what it must be like to go that long without scoring a goal. And he took his goal well. Alaves were good value for the money. It took them a long while. 3-0 probably slightly flattered them, but it was the impact of playing the first game of the season against a team, surprise, surprise, that had a player sent off in the first half.
Yes. He used to be a nice fellow kick-off, Emmanuel, didn't he? So.
Do you know what? I thought that. I thought for a while that he's changed since he went. And I kind of get it. If you have to buy into the Getafe style, so you have to be aggressive. You have to be forthright with your challenges and you know, do what the rest of the team do. You can't not be on board because the other players will and the manager will recognise that. But he wasn't known for this type of challenges. I worked on the Getafe Spurs friendly a couple of weeks ago, and I noticed it in that game that I was close up. It was at a training ground, and he put his foot in, and he was antagonising players for no reason. And I thought that he's changed, and then he has. He's fully converted now, and it was a dreadful challenge. Bouncing ball, he goes in, studs, leg straight, studs up, very high challenge. I think it was a yellow first, wasn't it? And the referee was urged to have a look at it and overturn it and give the red card. And it was a clear red card. And it cost them. Hmm. 0-0 at the time. They looked as if they were comfortable. They didn't look like they were going to get beat 3-0 for sure. And it all went horribly wrong for them after that. So it could have been avoided. It wasn't a necessary challenge in an area of the pitch which was dangerous for Getafe. I think they were on the attack. It was clear. It was a knockdown just outside the pep, sort of 30 yards from goal, and he flies in recklessly and dreadful challenge. So they paid the price, and they will continue to pay the price. But what would that price be? Qualifying for Europe or relegation? It will happen again. No surprise that they're the first. If there was a betting market, I'm not sure there is. First red card team to get a red card in La Liga this year, it would have been hot favourites for Getafe, and it cost them 3-0.
Yeah, I mean, you would have looked at who was playing first and gone for them, wouldn't you? Because yeah. Yeah. We like a red card in La Liga. And we got one in the Sevilla-Rayo game. We'll roll on to that, shall we? So, I mean, this had lots of things that you wouldn't necessarily want from the game. Started with a defensive howler, a couple of penalties, a red card towards the end, and, you know, everything.
I mean, we have to start. I can't imagine what it must be like. And as a striker, when you make your debut for a new team, you're away from the dangerous area of the pitch. You hope you don't miss a sitter, and that's what the first memory of the first, you know, impression is of the new supporters, your new teammates. You hope you don't mess up. You don't. Aruna Senganti, 3 or 4 minutes into the game, he made a mistake and got away with it just about, and then the goalkeeper. Vlachodimos, it's not a great clearance, so the ball comes straight back again to where Senganti was, and he makes another mistake. So he's making two mistakes in the space of 15-20 seconds in the first 3 minutes of the match. And when I say mistake, it's like he dwells in possession twice on the edge of the penalty box in a dangerous situation. So he gets away with the first one, but the second one, Alvaro Garcia sees him and thinks, I'm going to close him down. He kind of waited for he was open, the goalkeeper came.
He's waiting, isn't he? And he doesn't do anything, does he?
Yeah, and it's outside the box. The only excuse I can make, and I noticed it with the pitch, is these pitches are rock hard, and I don't know what Sevilla's is like. It doesn't look exactly the same as the ones we get at Real Madrid and Barcelona and Atleti and the Premier League teams. It looks more of a turf than what we get in normal. So they were flooding it. It's August. They were flooding it before kickoff. And there were instances where in different patches of the pitch, the ball weren't bouncing. They'd overwatered it. So it takes a while for it to drain through. And it did sort of bounce, but didn't bounce, if you know what I mean. But still not to the end. I'm not overriding the fact he should deal with it. But how do you get over making that mistake 3 or 4 minutes in? I mean, he's a free transfer. It's not as if they spent big money on him. He's 24 years of age. To his credit, he did. After that, it took him 10 minutes, 15 minutes. By half time, he was just like a normal player on the pitch. And by the end of the game, you're looking at him thinking, he got away with that. His team won somehow. And by the end of the match, the supporters were had forgotten about it. So he's lucky, and it was tough. But as a defender, you don't want to be making that mistake on your debut at home, first game of the season, and costing your team a goal.
Yeah, but it didn't matter because they came back and won the game, mainly by falling over. is that unfair? I mean, they got two penalties.
No, you're 100%. I mean, they got two penalties and they had one overturned.
Yeah.
The overturned one was correct. The referee. I have this feeling now. Why? Maybe it's just this referee. Is it easier or wiser to give the penalty and then let VAR sort it out than not give the penalty, allow play to continue, and then get a call from upstairs saying you've messed up there, take it all the way back. Next time the ball goes out, play.
Yeah, I see what you mean, because you stop the game if you give the penalty.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're almost saying you're taking away almost this kind of the referee makes the call or he doesn't make the call thing, and you're saying, right, just blow the whistle and then we'll have a look.
Yeah.
If it's anywhere like a penalty, blow the whistle, we'll have a look.
As opposed to the offsides.
Yeah, I take your point.
If you think it's offside or not, if it's close one, don't raise your flag and we'll sort it out. Are there some referees now that think, do you know what, I'll just give it and let them sort it out and maybe get another look myself? I don't know what I would do, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, VAR changes the game, doesn't it? It's what is probably the main criticism, is it ruins the game. It's not just that sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong, etc. It's that you've changed the nature of the game now. And it's a fair point that they maybe are giving them.
I think the Isaac Romero one that was overturned was an obvious decision to overturn. That was completely wrong. The second penalty that was given, Alvaro Garcia went to clear the ball, didn't realise that an opponent was nearby. And he actually said in the interview after the game, no, that was a penalty. He explained it in detail, short detail. I didn't realise he was there. I went to hook the ball clear and kicked him. That was a penalty. But the last one didn't even appear to, he didn't have another look, did he? It was an urge to go and have another look. And we were rushing through replays on our footage that we were getting, and there was one that you thought, he hasn't touched him. And then from different angles, it was hard to see the contact because it was from a different angle. But there was one clear one where I said he swiped and he might have best grazed Robbie Yeo, who came on as a sub. He's someone we need to briefly talk about. And the referee gave it. And I thought, well, this would be interesting because I'm not entirely convinced this is a penalty. But VAR didn't get involved. Well, VAR looked and obviously... There's no snickometer on that because it's the ball's not involved.
It's outrageous.
The
players need to be chipped up. The boots need to be chipped up. Their shirts. They should wear full body suits of electronic chips so we know exactly what's happened.
So that was given. Different penalty taker. Garrido took the first one and scored. He'd gone off by then. Peke takes the penalty and scores. And Sevilla get the win. And they were down to 10 men at that stage. Kike Salas with a wild lunge. And again, he's not that type of player. It was a challenge on the halfway line, by the touchline. But it was a wild, reckless lunge, challenge. Pointless.
Yeah.
And at that stage, you're thinking, well, they're not going to get the win. The crowd were 50-50. At the end of it, it was 100% the jubilant.
It's a results business.
Yeah. I mean, we had different periods of the game where they're booing and jeering, then they're cheering and singing, then they're abusing the owners of the club, and there was a mini protest here and a mini protest there, some depending on what happened on the field of play. And then by the end of it, people were in the stand, tears, and it was classic celebrations at, close to midnight on Saturday night, but by the time that game ended.
Yes, that's an old one, that, isn't it? How late they go on, but it made sense in Seville. Tell us about Robbie Yeo then, Terry. Came on, didn't he, in this one?
Yeah, he came on at half-time, and I was surprised he didn't start, and I was critical of the fact he didn't start. They've spent, I think, 8 million. They've spent Fran Gonzalez €1 million, young left-back from Atletico, €1 million, and him, 6.5 million euros. The reason I'm surprised he didn't start was, yeah, they've lumped all their money on him. It's a position they need. And also, he's in the middle of the season in Sweden, where he's been playing. They bought him from a Swedish club called Sirius. He scored a goal less than 2 weeks ago in the league. So I'm amazed he weren't starting. So they used Isaac Romero, who was Isaac Romero, works hard, chases lost causes, had a couple of half chances, but didn't take them. And I'm surprised that Robbie Hughes didn't start, but he came up for Romero at halftime. He's a 22-year-old Scot who started his career at Glasgow Rangers and then went off. I think his Swedish club bought him from Anderlecht. And my feeling, he created a really good first impression with me, and I think there's Sevilla fans. He's a 6-footer. He's taller than Isaac Romero. He looks quick, not lightning quick, but tall, strong, powerful, and they're calling him their version of Erling Haaland. He isn't that, trust me, he's not. But he's different to what Sevilla have had, and he looked full of promise. He's the player that goes down from the Greys, from Florin Lejeune, for the penalty that won the game. But he held on to the ball, he hustled and bustled against two centre-halves. He looked good. My question is, though, why wasn't he at the World Cup with Scotland? Got 15 goals this year in the Swedish league. He got goals the year before. It appears that they weren't blessed with strikers, Scotland. I can remember a couple of the strikers that went. And I'm thinking, how have they missed? Is it like, he hasn't got a cap.
No need to rub it in, Terry. We'll move on from Scotland in the World Cup. We'll leave him alone.
Yeah. But he was good.
Yeah, and good.
For $6.5 million, which is a big investment for Sevilla, it's crazy how many players have left the club. They're relying on young players. They had the young player called Nico Guillen in midfield. He was 18, who looked good, but he went off at half-time, I presume injured. Miguel Sierra is another youngster. Luis Garcia Plaza is complaining and filled the bench with youngsters. He's complaining that they need more players, and I just don't think they're going to be able to get.
No, I mean, he knew the deal, didn't he?
I made the point in commentary that why is he complaining? Because if Sevilla had money, he wouldn't be their manager.
Yeah, precisely. That's the deal.
He's a good manager.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a journeyman manager in La Liga, and he's been blessed with an opportunity. Kept them up, and he deserves the opportunity. And I like him. I think he's good. And I think he's a good fit for this current version of Sevilla. But don't keep moaning about not being money and not having enough players, because if they did have the money and more players, it would be an Emery or Lopetegui or you know, that type of, that level of manager. It wouldn't be Luis Garcia Plaza.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a classic La Liga Premier League transfer, Terry, for you to tell us about, that the Noble Mendy triangle. So, Hull have picked up a bargain. What is it, 21 million quid or something they've paid for him? Yeah, bargain.
Well, he was on loan at Rio last season from Real Betis, and with an option to buy for Rio. But he was never a regular. He had injuries. And when he was fit, he wasn't one of the first picks for Diego Perez, far from it. And you're thinking, well, the buyout was 8 million euros. That's not going to happen. Right, I'm not going to pay the 8 million to buy him from Betis. He's going to be back. And I thought, you know what, he's got promise. He's young. There is potential there. But the fact he wasn't first choice meant that Rio were never going to pay 8 million for him. Then out of the blue, Hull come in and offer 20 odd million to Rio, who then pay the 8 million to Betis. Betis must be sitting there thinking, hang on, he never barely played for them. He was injured or they didn't pick him. And now they're going to make a 16 million euro profit on him.
Yeah. Which it's good luck to Rio for doing it. But we've been here before, haven't we? This disparity between what players are worth to Premier League clubs to anybody else. And La Liga's not a hard league compared to the other leagues.
Exactly.
It's all just the Premier League versus, well, Premier League and, I guess, Saudis and, I guess, MLS for marquee players and stuff. But
It's astonishing that I'd be interested to look at the end of the market, the amount of transfers in the Premier League for less than 20 million. Because it appears everything is over 20 million. It's you know, even newly promoted teams are buying players, and you hear it briefly mentioned, oh, they're paying 20. They've agreed a fee of 25 million. outside the Barcelona, Real Madrid and Atleti, that doesn't happen in Spain. And I guess that's similar to other leagues in Europe. PSG chuck the money about, obviously, and Bayern Munich do and stuff like that. But other teams in these leagues don't. But it looks like... I kind of feel that if you offered a Premier League club a player for, say, 7 or 8 million, they'd go, it can't be that good. Less than 10 million?
Yeah.
No, it can't be that good. We'll have a look at our data and have a player for 5 million. It's 25 million. So, the line drops 25 million. We like him. it's madness.
Apparently, I don't play golf, but apparently, golf equipment is the same. That if you underprice golf equipment, people don't buy it, but you literally just add money to it and people will buy it because they think it'll be better.
So much is like that,
yeah. And they've got spare money,
yeah.
Anyway,
so much of that.
That
t-shirt you've got on is quite nice.
Yeah, it is. so you have to be a Patreon to see. I bought it on a market in Indonesia, Terry. it's a bargain signing. Racing Santander are back with a 2-2 draw and a very entertaining first half. They almost went in 2-0 up and somehow ended up 2-2.
Do you know, I was delighted the three teams that came out, and I kept going on about that all summer. This proved me right. Racing, irrespective of how they played, the fact the stadium was full, it was an emotional afternoon. I didn't realise it had been 14 years, and in that time they'd plummeted even further down below the second. Similar story to Depor, and very similar story to Malaga. So three troubled clubs over the last decade or so are all back. And the reason I like them back is it was almost always atmospheric in that stadium. And again, obviously, like Oviedo last year, away from the Liga for a long time, it was going to be an emotional afternoon. But they look fun to watch. They really, I liked their attitude. I liked some of the players. They look as if they're really going to be a good addition to La Liga this year. And Jose Alberto Lopez is the coach, someone I don't know too much about. I'm looking forward to getting to know more of. They raced into an early lead. I mean, it was two. The first one was a 50-50 penalty, possibly was. It's not a major, there was a decision to make and it's gone their way. The second goal from Sergio Martinez was a wonder strike. And that set them up. And I did a post during that game saying they raced into a 2-0 lead and it was an emotional afternoon. It was Sergio Aero, blah, blah, blah. As soon as I was finishing it, it was 2-2. By the time I was writing that post and congratulating Racing on being 2-0 up, it was a bang goal. Well, they've got one back, bang, 2-2. And then you're thinking they're going to be at danger of going under. But second half was it fair. It was it could have gone either way. So, Pep Gay scores the first goal for Villarreal. Possibly the keeper might have done a bit better. Sort of slowly trundles towards the far post. And you're thinking, one of those where you think, oh, it's gone in. Mm-hmm. It goes through a lot of bodies. It's not a major mistake from the keeper. But Nicolas Pepe's goal was a fantastic strike. So, Villarreal, you could see it. Racing had got something about them in their own stadium. Let's wait and see what they're like away from home. Loads of unfamiliar players. I'm looking forward to get to know. And Sergio Canales was brilliant. Some nice touches, good on the ball. You can see why they brought him back. He's not past it by any means. Can he play every game of the season? Probably not. But he showed his worth to Racing. And of course, him coming back is part of the story as well.
Yeah. We like an old bloke returning, don't we?
Yeah, Juan Carlos Valeron back at Depor. I never thought that would happen.
One more game to go, which is Espanyol's 3-0 win against Levante. Roberto Fernandez got a couple. And Tyrese Dolan, another Brit on target. Convincing this one, wasn't it, against Levante?
Far more convincing than I thought it was going to be. But the trials and tribulations of Espanyol last year, they had a wonderful first half of the season, struggled 17 games without a win, then rescued it at the end of the season. And you're looking in the summer and thinking, I don't think he's going to keep his job, Manolo Gonzalez. New investment has come into the club, but they've persevered with him. And they got off to a flyer. It was a surprising game in the fact Levante were dreadful. Luis Castro seemed a mere shadow of how they finished last season. Is the sale of Carl Cespe going to be an issue? I mean, when you look at his form, 11 in 13 games last season and kept them up. They've got the likes of Etu Young, who was on the bench. It was a poor display from Levante, and a good one. I'm pleased for Roberto Fernandes as well. I think he's one of those players that up front that hustles and bustles and puts himself about. For him, he started off the season well last year and then faded as the season went on, like most of the Espanyol players. But he scores two goals in this game, classic Roberto Fernandes goals. And Tyrese Dolan is a player who should score more. I think he only got one or two last season, and yet he had a really good, he looked on the face of it, he had a good first campaign with Espanyol. So I'm hoping for both of these players, who I think are good, for them to be amongst the goals on a more regular basis. So Espanyol, emphatic victory for them.
So there's some transfers have happened that have been bubbling around for a while. So we spoke to Rory last week, didn't we, in a season preview, and you were both saying, you know, in terms of, I mean, I'm not a massive one for predicting stuff in football, but you both sort of hesitated to predict it depending on where Rodri was going. It would, they've now agreed a fee. Barcelona have agreed a fee. 65 million quid, 75 million euros, thereabouts.
Yeah.
There's the downsides are his injury record in recent seasons.
Mm-hmm.
The upside is arguably the best kind of defensive deep midfielder in the world in recent seasons. So I'm going to say that you're encouraged more than fearful.
Yeah, someone asked me a couple of weeks ago on a radio interview, if Rodri went to Real Madrid, does that make them favourites to win the league? And I said, yes. So I can't deny that and turn around now and say that it's not a great signing for Barcelona. People are saying that means Frankie de Jong will have to go, and you could play both of those together.
Mm. They're going to deregister. They can sort of, because he's got a long-term injury, they can knock him off the wages till January, can't they?
We're going through that slippery slope that they've had with a few players now where they're trying to force them into surgery. The players refuse surgery, so it then becomes an issue between club and the player, which De Jong wants conservative treatment. Also, the fact that he picked it up in the World Cup and continued to play, I think, has irritated Barcelona in the fact that he knew he had this injury. But it's the World Cup, and you can understand the player thinking it's only a niggle, but it's turned out to be a tear of a ligament. He's turned down the offer of surgery. He wants the conservative approach to try and rehab it. So there's obviously things going on there. So they will, I'm sure, deregister him. But long-term, I mean, Frankie de Jong, I think he's a really good player, really good player. We've described him as the holding midfielder at Barcelona, but it can be a lot more than that. I mean, he's a playmaker. We've seen him score goals. We've seen him play only in more attacking positions. So if there's a need to balance up the books and they can move him on when he's fit and healthy, but that's not going to be till next summer now. No one's going to buy him in January.
Yeah.
Not going to buy a player that's, if he's recovered from injury, no one's going to pay that money that he's worth.
Yeah.
So somehow they've got to try and get them in. Pedri, Gavi, Fermin Lopez, Dani Olmo, Casado, Bernal. It's not going to be easy. Rodri goes straight in, of course, when he's 100% fit. But it is. Jorge Valdano said on the Spanish media on a program that it's worth the 70. It's worth Barcelona. If they could have gone for 40, that's probably the right price. But it's worth paying an extra 30 to not let Real Madrid have him.
Yeah, fair point.
Because you're stopping Real Madrid from significantly getting better.
Yeah.
He's the player that they've been after. Zubimendi in recent years, another holding midfield players. Tchouaméni is playing that role at the moment. Rodri was the obvious player for Real Madrid. And the fact that you've paid over the top to get him, over the top, though, it's a difficult price to judge, isn't it? That he's only got a year left. He's 30. He's had the knee injury. He's got a minor back injury at the moment. If there is such a thing as a minor back injury where you have a little bit of surgery. But he is, if he's fit and healthy and plays, he makes a huge difference to Barcelona. And it's good for us. It's our business, Spanish football. It's good for us. You know, we're getting the players that want to come back to La Liga, the players that the superstars that are in La Liga now in comparison to the Premier League. And I've heard it mentioned, I've had this feeling, and I've heard it mentioned recently by other people when they go into work and stuff like that. And they're saying, who are the superstars in English football? Why do the superstars are now, they play elsewhere, where it's at Bayern Munich, whether they're going to Spain. That is an issue for the Premier League. I think there's only one genuine superstar in the Premier League. There's loads of good players, of course there is. And there were superstar managers. They've gone. And I think that in the Premier League now, you're looking at Erling Haaland. From the World Cup, he's the only superstar that plays in the Premier League. Can you think of any others? Salah's gone.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I mean, Bruno Fernandes, he wasn't a star of the World Cup, was he? But he's probably the second, isn't he, in the Premier League at the moment, I guess. Is that right?
Yeah.
You're making me think that. Saka. Yeah. I like Saka. Yeah, I mean, there are good players in the Premier League. But I take your point. Some of the, you know, some of the glittering world stars and Mbappe. For me, Mbappe is the best player at the moment.
Yeah,
and he doesn't win much, but I do think individually he's the best. I do think he's the best player. João Cancelo, Terry. I mean, he did better than we expected, didn't he? He went in January.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
He was fantastic. Right back, left back. There's talk of Balde being the subject of transfer interest from clubs. They've got to sell someone.
Here we are again. What are we? The 17th of August, and we're here with Barcelona again. The balance sheet, the ins, the outs, the sums. They've sold Ferran Torres is gone, but it would seem that they need more out in order to balance everyone up and get everyone registered again.
Yeah, and you know, the likes of Casado, Rooney Badaji's out for possibly the season. And he was one of those that was a potential sale. They paid 2.5 million for him. They could easily have got 20.
Yeah.
He's picked up an ACL, so he's out for the season. That's a big blow. So he's another player that can be deregistered. But they Araujo has gone on loan to Liverpool for the year. Apparently in his first game, created a really good first impression. The supporters liked him, a different style of defending from Liverpool to Barcelona. And he for many years at Barcelona, he's been a really good player.
Yeah. You want fingers crossed for Araujo. Sometimes, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but sometimes I think a fresh start, go somewhere else and play and draw a line under how he felt and how he was before and have another go and show what a good player he is.
And they're talking about Koundé possibly being the subject of transfer speculation. So it's going to be interesting. And of course, still talking about Julian Alvarez.
Yeah, still.
I can still see it happening.
Yeah, because Hansi Flick wants somebody else in, doesn't he? But
yeah,
as discussed before, because they played a friendly, didn't they? Adeyemi scored, didn't he, in the friendly?
Yes.
So, and he praised Gordon Adeyemi. So there's an argument, though, did you need to do those deals for wingers when the centre-forward is the obvious one to do first if you're going to end up in this situation of doing the maths and trying to make it all work?
I totally agree. I mean, the centre-forward is the priority. And yet, they're going to go Anthony Gordon, Karemi, it's Adeyemi, Karemi, that's what they want. Karim Adeyemi. And it's a weird way of going about it. Or did they just know that this was not going to be done with Julian Alvarez until, if it gets done, the last few days of the transfer window?
But this is the problem. See, this is why I've said this before. I would abolish the transfer window in the era of PSR, whatever we call it now, financial squad balancing. Because what it creates, you've already got a limit. You can't bankrupt your club now if you're following these rules and they're applied properly. So I don't know why you need this cliff edge of transfers, because it means a deal like Alvarez, which if it gets done, it's over 100 million. So how do you do that and fit it in to all this complicated balancing you've got to do and do a deal on September the 1st? It doesn't make sense.
See, was it Chelsea give Manchester City a deadline of, unless you buy him, and so Fernandes, but this, the deal's off.
Yeah.
City just laughed.
Yeah. But I can see why.
The deadline's September.
Yeah, the deadline's that's 2 weeks. Deadline. Yeah. But also, I can see from Chelsea's point of view, thinking, well, hang on, because we've got to balance our books in the next 2 weeks. So don't do this to us on September the 1st and come with a big, because then we can't do anything with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It is. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see. But I mean, Atleti play this week against Malaga at home.
Yeah.
The stories are, well, how is he going to be received? Is he going to be part of the squad? If you're Simeone, you can do it without all this that's going on. Now, I'm not saying just give him to Barcelona and let him go, but if there is no resolution to him staying, it's what's the point?
But it's the same deal.
But they're going to rush to spend it.
But the very good point that you made about Rodri, not only are you, you're making yourself weaker by letting your best attacker go, you're making your direct team better, your direct rival better, aren't you? So that's the danger. If they could sell him to Arsenal, Man City or somebody, or Bayern Munich.
Man City.
Yeah.
Well, used to play for Man City. Never played. Who knew?
Yes. Christian Romero, while we're talking about Atleti, gone. It just makes sense, this deal, didn't it? Spurs have signed 50 players for billions of pounds this summer.
Senesi and Van Hecker.
Yeah.
They've got Danso as cover. They didn't need Romero and Van de Ven as a starter. It's. Yeah. I'm going to say this once because everyone's saying it. Is he the most obvious, obvious Atletico Madrid player ever? It's in Romero. Do you know what? I liked him at Spurs, and I really do think he's world class. I mean, two World Cup finals, won one of them, won two Copa Americas, won the Europa League with Spurs, and people still question whether he's good enough. Of course he is. Atleti have got a steal because of the Spurs spending money. And because of the situation, it became a little bit toxic for him because of the amount of times he got sent off. Supporters felt that he let the team down at times. I thought he was harshly treated by referees in the Premier League, if I'm being honest. One or two other players as well are. I think whenever he made a tackle, it was an instant, it's another red for him. He's going to be sent off. So I think he was harshly treated there. But I think Atleti, for the amount they paid for him, 30-odd million is a steal. And I think he's... And again, that leaves... Who's Atleti got? I mean, that's about Ruggeri going to Villa. Why? He was really good.
But they've signed Grimaldo, haven't they? So
he still needs... I mean, it's sort of, they're selling Ruggeri, but it means Lionel Mend possibly could leave. I haven't seen any... In fairness to Atleti, they're deep down in the transfer speculation in Spain. It's Barcelona, it's Real Madrid, particularly this summer. Diamandi going in for big money, and Bernardo Silva and Dumfries and the other players at Real Madrid and Barcelona making a splash. Atleti have kind of gone under the radar a little bit again this summer, which Simeone won't mind, but it does mean Hansko was good, Pubil was good. There's been speculation with Pubil going to the Premier League. So your Hansko, Pubil, Lenormand, Romero, they're probably carrying 2 million as well.
And then they see Mendy go for 20 odd million and they thinking, well, how much do we charge? So there are two more games to go. I'm going to the Edinburgh Festival. Terry, is what's happening tomorrow. So that's why we're not doing Deportivo versus Elche. Also, because this dribbling, stumbling start to the season, you have to call it at some point and do a podcast at some point during it. So enjoy the rest of the match round, which is now Monday and Wednesday, and then we start the next one. And eventually, Real Madrid and Barcelona will play, and then we'll come back and do another podcast. It's not all about them, everybody. It's not all about them, but it is quite a lot about them.
Yeah.
And we will be back for that. Terry, have a good week, and everybody, thank you for your support. We'll see you soon. Bye bye.